Dear friends, today, because of the unfavorable weather conditions, many of our regular students are not present, quite naturally so. And there are many newcomers too, who are not regularly attending these classes. So, we will do something that has been on my mind for quite some time, and that is to discuss the special place of Bhagavad Gita in scriptures, and also have some survey of what we have studied till now. It is much needed, and from after every few classes I try to do that, so that we keep the link of what we have already studied and then proceed forward accordingly. So Bhagavad Gita is a very special scripture. It is known for its tremendous capacity to make those great truths in the Upanishads accessible to people who really are not having that kind of spiritual potential initially. We know that Upanishadic teachings are given to a student who is already a very highly developed one. His psyche is already soaring to the with great intensity. That person is seeking to experience the ultimate truth. The students of Upanishad, as we read in the Upanishads themselves, their questions are about the ultimate reality and how to experience that. They already exhibit tremendous understanding about the transitory nature of this experience of phenomena. They already are rooted into it. Their life is already, we see, like in case of Nachiketa, one of the classic example of the Upanishadic student, that he is not being tempted by anything in this world. He is just seeking that ultimate knowledge by which the life becomes illumined, one reaches the goal of life, one knows who am I. So that is, he was being tempted by the teacher, the death, that, well, you can seek this, you can seek that, if you want you can take this, all the riches of the world were kept open for him. He was told you can live forever if you want, but this young boy, he rejects all that and says, no, I only want the knowledge of the self, because that alone, I am sure, is capable of bringing me the ultimate goal of life. So he was very sure about it. There was no vacillation in his position. He already had acquired that stage. And we see it in most of the other Upanishads too. For example, Kena Upanishad, another beautiful, very small but beautiful Upanishad, which begins with this very question, that who is the self? What is the nature of the self is the beginning inquiry of the disciple there, that who makes these eyes see? Who makes the ears hear? Who makes the lungs breathe? All that question, that means it is already the person is seeing that the body is not I. See, that is the beginning where the questioner is already there. So the knowledge of ultimate truth is given at that stage. It is prescribed also that what qualities, what prerequisite qualities should a sincere student of Vedanta should acquire. It is told that such a student should all have the discrimination and dispassion. That is, the Sanskrit technical words are viveka and vairagya. Discriminate what is real, what is unreal, what is permanent and what is transitory, what is changing and what is not changing, what is I and what is not I, and discrimination. And then dispassion. Only discrimination is maybe looked upon as just an intellectual activity. But this discrimination is real only when our life is tied to the discrimination. It is compared to like this, that if you know that the food that you are about to eat has been poisoned, somebody comes and tells you, hey, you are about to eat that food but it is poisoned. Then if the knowledge clicks, if that understanding comes, then what will happen? You won't keep on eating, okay, I know it is poison. The eating will instantaneously stop. You will drop the spoon. You will not take any of that. It is poison. Even if you get slight doubt that it may be poisonous, you would say, no, better not take a chance. If somebody is telling you convincingly that it is poisonous, you won't take it. So, the discrimination that all these names and forms are unreal, they come and go. What should that tell us in life? That don't run after them. So, if the discrimination is real and intense, it gets followed by dispassion. If those things are not real, the hankering for that will not be there. So, therefore, this Upanishadic student has to have discrimination, dispassion, so that the truth of the unchanging self can get revealed. Then also, it is told that there has to be the certain virtues need to be cultivated. Why the virtues need to be cultivated? Because the spiritual life requires those. You have to have that perseverance. You have to conscientiously develop that calmness and steadfastness of mind. Then only it becomes possible. That is called six wealths by which you can then get God realization. It is called, therefore, the six godly wealths, six divine wealths, howsoever you would like to translate it. It is called that Daivi Shat Sampatti, Shamadi Shat Sampatti. This is some kind of wealth which is very useful on this path, and it includes that you should give up that lust, greed, the anger, the hatred, the jealousy. All those things are to be given up, and develop that calmness, shama, dama. It is called shama, is mental restraint. Dama is physical restraint. Both must be there, physical restraint our mind is our instrument, body is also our instrument. In fact, both are closely connected. It is the mind that functions through the body. So the mind and body, both these instruments have to be under our control so that we can make good use of it. If they are not under our control, we will not be able to make use of it. So they are to be, one has to strive to bring them under control. So that is called Shama and Dama. Then there the other one is Uparati. It is a very important thing that the attraction for the sense objects, that should start waning. And not only the actual position of them, but even the attraction for them should start waning. That is called Uparati. Then there has to be forbearance. Forbearance, because the world will bring you pleasures and pains. It is, you cannot have only pleasures, although we like to have things, situation like that it will be all sweet and honey all the time. In principle itself, it is impossible to have any such situation. The world is going to be always a mixture of pleasure and pain. There is no possibility of pleasure without an understanding of pain. And pain is also not possible without having a sense of pleasure. So, to forbear these things in life, it is an important quality to be cultivated, quality of forbearance. And then there has to be faith, a dynamic faith, that yes, I can realize God, faith in oneself. Yes, I have this truth in me and I can realize it, I can experience it. That self-confidence has to be there. The confidence and faith in that power of goodness has to be there. So, without that, the beginning doesn't take place. For any work, first comes the confidence. When for any endeavor that one goes into, first there has to be a confidence. Like you came here today, so you had the confidence that yes, I can do it, I can come there, although there is snow, yes, still I have the capacity to get there. And thus the first step is to have that feel, yes, I can do it. Those who are that negative mentality is very detrimental for spiritual practices. Swami Vivekananda always tells, be positive, have self-confidence. Even the confidence, the faith in God is secondary. Faith in oneself is primary. It is very important in practice of spiritual discipline to have this idea of self-confidence firmly rooted in ourselves, that yes, in case if I have to progress, the first requirement is this self-confidence. Yes, I can do it. So, and that is called Shraddha. Then, the last of these six is that it is called Samadhan in Sanskrit. That one should be satisfied with whatever one gets in the world, so far as one's these worldly aspirations are concerned. That no, I must have a big palace to live in. Well, a person whose mind is on spiritual progress cannot have all those drags. there will be big distractions. So this person sees whatever I get in this age, okay, I can work through that to towards my spiritual goal. It is a very important quality that needs to be developed, because it actually decides our these preferences in life. The priorities in life get decided by that. That yes, my goal is to realize God. So whether I become a doctor or I become something else in life, what difference does it make? Not really much. Whether I become a millionaire or a pauper, what difference does it make? This person is, because this is not very important. No? Like if you are boarding a plane to get to somewhere, you have suppose taken a flight from here and you want to go to say China, a long flight, and you are going to land in Shanghai from New York. Now your important reason for which you have taken the flight is not because you wanted to sit in the first class or in the business class or in the economy. They are not big considerations. It is not even a big consideration what they are going to give you to eat in while in the flight. So long as you get something, that is fine. And even if you are not given something, well, you can withstand for those some hours, that is fine. Provided the main thing is that, yes, I must reach the destination. I had a very funny experience. It is good to narrate in this, that how our priorities then make the other things secondary. I was going to Puerto Rico a couple of years back. Shraddha knows that how I started in the morning, early morning from Providence, and then the flight had several problems. It was the Spirit Airlines. Then it stopped first it started late, then we missed the connecting flight somewhere, then they could not arrange some other flight, and then they shifted from one place, it was in Miami and Fort Lauderdale, they kept on shifting us between this and this, and then they tried to put it on us on our other American Airlines. We all passengers, we were concerned only with this thing, that whether we will be able to get to the destination or not, or when, at what time. All other things, you know, that otherwise occupy our minds became secondary. I did not even realize till I reached, got into the plane that was ultimately going to Puerto Rico, it was that I didn't eat anything. It was because that was comparatively secondary. I did not realize even that I was so tired running between here, there, and we had to fight with the airliner staff that what is this, what are you doing, it is all your fault, you should do something about it, you can't keep us standard like this indefinitely, tell us something. So we were running about here, there, and never felt that I am very tired. Otherwise, I would have said, oh, so tiresome. But because the mind was all fixed on getting there on time. I had a talk to be given at 6 o'clock. I saw that I can't make it before 6 o'clock. Then I called them, their Shraddha was there. So I told that, well, please postpone it. Postpone means by 1 hour, if when the people come, because it was not possible to convey everybody that it is going to be cancelled, people will be coming. So I tell them that I'll be coming a little late, and then as it arrived, Normally I would have said, let me have a little tea or coffee, but the people were waiting there. She had come there with her car. I just got into the car, drove there, gave my talk. Then I realized that I have not eaten anything for the whole day, and then nothing. So all those considerations become secondary when you are focused on attaining that particular objective. So when the life's objective is to realize God, to realize your own self, all other considerations, whether I become a basketball star or not, it doesn't make a difference. If I become one, I don't mind that, but that is not the primary thing. It is good that if I get to travel in first class instead of the economy, that is good. Like it is told, a lady, very obstinate, and she sat in the first class. Her ticket was for economy, but she went and sat there. The steward came and told her, "Hey, ma'am, you cannot sit here. Your ticket is economy. Go to the economy." She said, "No, I am going to sit. I am not going to move." Then the pilot, the captain came out. He said, "I will do what is, let me try." He came and told that lady something in the ear, and then she immediately got up and sat in the economy. They asked, "What did you tell her?" The flight was to somewhere, to Honolulu, and I told her that the first class doesn't go to Honolulu. So she went and sat in the economy class. So as we know that this doesn't happen, it is economy or first class, all land, the whole flight lands at the same time. So those things are not very important for us. It is, we all reach there at the same time, we know. So they are a little bit comfort, okay, if you get it, fine, if you don't get it, it doesn't matter either. So therefore, that is the idea of samadhan, that whatever other things I get in life, that is fine. Whether I get a very nice job, okay, fine. If I do not get that good a job, okay, very good. It is all like that. Other things, they just become very secondary in life. Whether I get to be with my relatives, with my parents, or if I have to live amongst other people, okay, whatever, it is secondary something. Primary thing is to realize God. For that, all efforts get concentrated on that. Other things become then secondary. You are satisfied about other things. Whatever other things I get, I am perfectly satisfied with them. Doesn't make much of a difference there. It absolutely doesn't make a difference. I have seen in my general experience that the quality of happiness doesn't make much of a difference. Whether you are eating, say, a chocolate ice cream, or if you are eating, some people like that, but if you are eating, say, only a dry bread, the quality of joy that a hungry man gets while eating a dry bread isn't very different from a person who is eating, say, a chocolate ice cream. It is, the quality of joy doesn't differ at all. It is the same thing. It is whether somebody is staying in the palace, has a very nice bed to sleep on. The quality of sleep doesn't differ from a person who is homeless and is sleeping on the sidewalk. the quality of sleep remains the same, doesn't change much. So the priorities, therefore, are, well, what is the important purpose of living? So that is called samadhan. So the study of Vedanta primarily want the student who is adept in all this. Now, if we look at our practical daily life, most of us are nowhere near that ideal. It is therefore those Upanishadic teachings, as they are, although they intellectually may appeal to us, practically they do not bring about any difference in our life. We consider very nice philosophy, wonderful, looks, sounds true. It is very nice, very poetic, but it doesn't connect to our life. And it was the great genius of Lord Krishna who brought these very truths without diluting them to our level, where we can connect to those truths. So how does that happen? That is where the special feature of Bhagavad Gita is, that it addresses a person who is afflicted with lust and greed, who is a common person like us, who is being buffeted in this world by so many conflicts. And God is not at all a primary consideration there. God or spiritual life or getting ultimate knowledge, those are not at all matters in that thought. Our life is centered on these, whether I get this job or I don't get this job, whether I get to marry this girl or this boy or not, whether all those ideas, they become very central in our mind. Whether I get to be elected as president or not, it becomes a very central idea in some people. It is so God is not really important in our life, except to beg to God that please give me those things. God or the self-knowledge is not at all a consideration for us. It is the other mundane considerations, they occupy our life. And those considerations always create tremendous conflict because of their mutually contradictory nature. Like, just see that we want that, we all want that we should be peaceful, there should be peace in life. And yet we want the respect and recognition from people. Now both these things run counter to each other. If you want recognition from people, if you want to be a celebrity, means your life will be always busy meeting with them, talking to them, always surrounded by people. You cannot even run away, as they say, that paparazzi will be pursuing you all the time. But yet we want to become celebrity and yet want peace at the same time. Contradictory desires. And we want pleasure and want to be also involved in many activities. We want safety and at the same time we want adventure. Is it not so? We have all these conflicting desires in us, and that creates the life gets kind of torn between these conflicts. Our life gets torn because of this very nature of these desires. If there is just one desire, which does not come in conflict with any other desires, it would have been so nice. We would have just gone there. But there are so many conflicting desires that, there is no other desire actually except God realization, which does not come in conflict with some other desire. So the life is just full of these dilemmas, whether I should do this or whether I should do that. I cannot do both is obvious, but if I don't want to miss any of them, how can I do that? It is I want to spend my time in arts and painting and all that. One of our friends likes that. But he also wants to do so many other things in life, and he has equal interest in those. So how to find time for all those things? You cannot. So it is always a dilemma whether I should do this or I should do that. And the mind is not satisfied even if the person goes to makes one choice, because there is the feeling that I missed that. Oh, it would have been so nice if I had gone in that direction. It is, this is the life of we people, and that is represented by the disciple Arjuna. Arjuna is pretty much like us. He is not like the disciples of Upanishads. Not at all. He is hankering for the kingdom. He wants that his kingdom, those rascals, those our cousins who through deceit they have snatched it from us. They gave us no end of troubles. They cheated us at every step. Now we are going to war. We will decimate them in war, get our kingdom back. We shall teach them a lesson that they will never forget in their lifetime. That kind of, you know, the general ordinary persons, that revengeful nature is there in Arjuna, wants to get his kingdom back, and all that is there. He is not the renouncing sage in the Upanishads. He is not a student of that type at all. In fact, when we come to see the question that he puts to Lord Krishna, it is not at all about the God realization or higher truths of life. Because of the tremendous this dilemma, what he should do, what he should not do, especially when it is at a juncture that both both sides of the scale seem to be vacillating. Sometimes this side seems to be heavier, sometimes that side seems to be heavier. So Arjuna was not able to decide and was not able to stop either there. He couldn't buy time to make a decision. That also was not possible. It is like you are at a T junction or at a fork, and you have to take left or right somewhere at the fork. Now you have to choose, and suppose that choice is going to be final, leading to totally different directions. Now what are you going to do? You don't know. If I go to left, it will be a big, maybe I will get what I want, but maybe it will be leading to a big problem. If I go to right, there also maybe a big problem will be there. What do I do here now? A very dramatic situation develops there in our life. And it is a situation you cannot stop also there. Other cars will be honking behind you. It is, you cannot just stop your car at the fork and start thinking. There is no time to buy there. So you have to make a decision. I go left or I go right. And so It is the person therefore becomes completely confused. What should I do? And then you ask somebody. You do not understand, but you know somebody may be understanding, somebody may know better than I know. So I will ask, how should I resolve this conflict? Where should I go? So Lord Krishna is taken up as such an instructor who will tell where should I go to get this conflict resolved, which path should I take. The question of Arjuna was this, that I am completely confused. Sammoodha Chetaha, the beautiful word of, very meaningful word there. Bhagavad Gita uses the words which are in one stroke, you know, it conveys lot of meaning. Very poetic, and at the same time, they are so exact that you can't replace those words by something else. It is exactly that particular connotation is given exactly by that word, dharma sammoodha chetaha, that what should I be doing now, completely confused. And I am suffering terribly too. I can't remain in this state also, because how is this state? A state of tremendous suffering. Shoka. It is, the Sanskrit word is shoka. I am immersed, he says, in this ocean of grief. How is that grief? It is pulling away all my powers of my thinking. My all faculties are getting just pulled out because of this grief. I am not able to withstand this grief. So, please take me out of this terrible situation of grief. Arjuna does not ask Krishna there, tell me the ultimate truth, give me the knowledge of the self, tell me something about God. All those questions will come later. But here, when he is seeking the guidance of Lord Krishna in the beginning, there is absolutely no other mention but this grief. I am caught in this grief, and please take me out of this. And while telling this, still there is that idea of, yes, I know, I want this. What does Arjuna say there? Because of the conflict, he tells, he suspects that Lord Krishna will tell him to fight, which he does not want to do. So, while telling Lord Krishna, you are my teacher, you are, now I request you that please take me out of this terrible mire that I am caught in, and show me the way. He is telling all that, but does not forget to tell that I will do shishyasteham, I am your disciple. Tell me, teach me. In that breath itself he tells Lord Krishna, but I will not fight. Yodhya, I am not going to fight. On the one hand, he is saying that teach me, tell me what to do, but some reservations. I am not going to fight, because he suspects there that Krishna is going to tell him to fight, and that exactly is what Lord Krishna did, because the resistance and that suspicion was so much that fighting is the right thing. But we don't want to do that which is right. We are afraid of doing what is right. We know in the heart that this is the right thing to do. But the weakness doesn't let us take that momentous step. we all get this problem from time to time. We are convinced of what is right. We also decide that yes, I must do this. I have to do this. In fact, we take the decision also that I am going to do this. But when the time comes to act on that decision, then the weakness starts showing up. Then you remember so many things that you may have to give up or you may have to lose. Not that you had not thought about it earlier, but before the situation comes right at your doorstep, you may be thinking many things, but the force of the actual situation makes the hearts which appear to be very brave, they are shown how shaky they really are. And they start becoming shaky. That yes, I know, I must do this. Then they find some excuses not to do it. And they call it thinking. It is not thinking. It is just trying to find out an escape route. It is thinking is something that is going to be constructive in the sense of how to achieve this goal. You have set the goal, and thinking would be that how am I to achieve this goal? What is happening here in case of Arjuna is not a thought as to how am I going to achieve the goal, but how do I now, although I have proclaimed that I want to achieve this goal, how can I turn away from this resolve? It is, human beings are very, intelligent, and unfortunately use that intelligence for their own fall. It is seen very often that instead of making this our intelligence serve the purpose of our attaining the higher goal of which we are convinced, the intellect keeps on telling that, oh, okay, but if you go in that direction, you know, what will happen to this, what will happen to this? We are terribly scared of losing this world. That yes, my connections in this world, what will my father think, what will my mother think, what will my children think, all these are, these things become very important then. And you bring all those things to run away from the ideal. And so when Lord Krishna was asked for advice, the first advice that Bhagavad Gita gives, that is the most important in the opinion of Swami Vivekananda get into, that is, be strong and get rid of this kind of weakness in you. All this is not thinking, but it is the weakness that is making you get into these thoughts. It is just weakness. And he therefore scolds Arjuna in very bitter words. Scolding is very necessary. It is not that all the students can always be taught with goody-goody language. And this is a funny present kind of psychology. And that tells that no, you should not scold, you should not beat the students, all very wrong ideas. It is many a times a nice sound slap on the cheek will teach the things very quickly. It is nothing wrong. Now, it is this our Swami Ranganathanand ji, in his book on Bhagavad Gita, on this point he has given many these advices about this, the teaching methods, that it is one makes this present child psychology, no, there will be a trauma, and then that trauma will keep on continuously bothering that child, and this will happen and that will happen. It is all really nonsense. When it is required, there has to be a jolt given to the understanding. I have seen many cases where a real sound thrashing brings the person right on the track. If you just keep on, you know, oh no dear, and this, and that doesn't work, you know. It is, I know, in our mobile dispensary, I had told that story in this class many times, and we went to, had gone out to our regular stop, it was in a school, and then there were many patients. The teacher brought one small, about fourth grade student. She was having a big boil on her foot, on one of her toes, and then it was suppurating, getting worse and worse, and so she was not allowing anybody to touch it. The doctor examined and said, told the that assistant, that, well, open the wound, dress it, and all that. And the girl wouldn't let anybody touch that. She started screaming aloud, and the teacher tried to call, no, no, dear, it will be all right. He will do just this thing. It won't be painful at all. It will be nice. It will be good. The girl, because of that kind of sympathy, started crying more loudly. Then that assistant who was doing the dressings came to a doctor, told doctor, I can't do, you know, the girl doesn't allow to me to touch at all. The doctor said, okay, I will take care of it. And then he got off from his seat and then gave her hard. Hey, what are you doing? Don't you understand? Dram. One more. And then the girl got just that completely in haze. Was till now she was getting all this kind of, oh dear, no, this, that, goody goody. That was not working at all. And she became, oh, flabbergasted. And in that 1 minute, the compounder opened the wound, took out the pus, and then did it. She kept quiet all the time. And then, after a minute, when it was done, started smiling very nicely. So, that is what is needed. You know, it is not that these things are not good. They have their value in life. Sometimes we, just that attitude of caressing and nice and goody-goody things, that doesn't work at all. Some require a nice kick on the back. And Arjuna got that there. Lord Krishna scolded him in the bitterest possible language there. And since it is not written in Bhagavad Gita, but I think he must have given him a blow also. It is. I can think of that because the words are like that. And Swami Vivekananda says that is what we need. Arjuna then started thinking that, yes, all my understanding has some terrible flaw. And then he started asking Krishna about what actually should be done. So then Lord Krishna tells him, hey, come on, analyze. That what you call death, is it really death? You are afraid that you will die and your all those relations, you will be fighting against them, they will die. As if you are not going to fight, they are going to live forever. We think of dying as if that if we don't fight or if we don't take chances in life, the main thing, the fight is here, that to take the leaps in the right direction. If we are not going to make a move in the positive direction, if we are afraid that if I make a move in the right direction, I may die. Are you not going to die otherwise? Are you going to live forever? Body means that it has to go through all these stages, birth, growth, and so forth. So it has to die one day. Whether you go in the right direction or not, the body is going to die. So, but what does not die? That great verse comes there, Dehi Nityam Avadhyoyam Dehe Sarvasya Bharata Dehi. The one who is dwelling in the body is different from the body. That understanding is the most essential thing, that I is this body is not I. I am the indweller of the body. The body is my instrument. Like you are driving a car, you are not the car, you are inside the car, you are sitting in the car. The car is being driven by you. You are not the car, so you are not this body. Do you understand, Kevin? What? Yes, huh? So you are not the body. You are dweller in this body. It is that is a great understanding. So what is changing? The body is undergoing all these changes, and it will die. The dweller in the body never dies. It remains the same all the time. There is no change there. It remains the same. So this is what is shown there. And then it goes on telling, Bhagavad Gita goes on telling Arjuna that be convinced that the self is immortal and the self is divine, perfect, and it is all pervading. These teachings are given to Arjuna there. And then the 39th verse of the second chapter tells that, look, Arjuna, what I have told you is not just theory. I will now, it is something that is practically applicable to. I will now tell you how to make it practically applicable in your life. And that is called yoga. Bhagavad Gita has these two branches. That is Brahma Vidya and Yoga Shastra. Brahma Vidya is the understanding of the truth, and Yoga is the conversion of that understanding into practical experience. The understanding, if it doesn't get, if it doesn't flow in one's life, it is useless. So that understanding has to become an instrument of change in life. The life must change according to that understanding, and that is called yoga. So he says that how this yoga is to be applied in life, and that the details of that we were seeing in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In between, in the second chapter, Arjuna asks a question that how the life gets transformed, and Lord Krishna gives the science of this transformed life, that so that one will be able to follow those things and thus cultivate those virtues in us, in oneself. So that is, then in the third chapter we see that how the actions are to be the instruments of liberation, rather than what they are now, the causes of bondage. Now those very actions are to become the instruments of liberation. And that is done not by changing the action, but by changing the attitude with which the action is done. Such a simple thing. And the same action, just the attitude behind the action, if changed, that action becomes the instrument of liberation. So, it is simple. One can never say that, I cannot do spiritual practice, I have so much of work. Yes, very good. That work can be your spiritual practice. What, Emily, no? Yes, work can become your spiritual practice. It is, nobody can complain, I have so much of work, I cannot do spiritual practice. The work is your spiritual practice. If we don't know how to do the work, then it is a problem. Like a person was given the gun and or sword and a shield to protect himself against dacoits. And then the fellow met the dacoits, and the dacoits just gave him nice beating, took away all the money, and he came back. And, well, we gave you the sword and the shield to fight with the dacoits. You see, how can I fight with dacoits? In my one hand was occupied with sword, another with shield, both hands occupied, how can I fight? So the instruments meant for fighting became the bondage of that fellow, because he didn't know how to use them. So similarly our actions, because we do not know, those very actions, they bind us. If we understand how to do those actions, what will happen, Chris? Oh, there are two Chris's. Okay.
We'll go forward, we'll progress.
We'll progress. Once we know how to use those actions, we will progress. Then we will complain, there is lot of work. No. The lot of work means lot of progress. Is it not, Kevin? More the work, more will be the progress. So don't feel shy, don't shy away from work. Feel that, yes, the more the work, the more the chance for my improvement. So every work becomes the means of improvement. What a great practical lesson. When I meditate on this idea, you know, it is as it were the whole cloud of ignorance gets cleared. How the path is so practical, so simple. The means are with all of us. We don't have to do, some funny things like performing this austerity and that austerity. Some funny ideas we have that for God realization we should be breathing from this nostril and that nostril and nothing like that. That is a different idea. But my main important thing is every work has this potential to become spiritual practice. And we shall see in the third chapter as we are progressing that how the attitude gets changed. There also it is a gradation, and we go on a graded path in changing this attitude. The change doesn't come in one moment. One has to work on it steadfastly. The change gradually sets in, surely sets in, and one sees in one's own life how the illumination is getting rid of all this ignorance.